Hi, listeners. Exciting news. Crime House Plus and Murder True Crime Stories are celebrating America's 250th by dropping a four-part limited series on the crimes that built America. These are the crimes and cases that gave us Miranda rights, sparked criminal profiling, and a murder that built America's missing children movement. Follow Murder True Crime Stories for a new episode every Monday leading up to July 4th, or you can listen to all of them right now with Crime House Plus. To join, go to crimehouseplus.com, or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, tap Try Free at the top of this show's page.
This is Crime House.
Hi, listeners. It's Vanessa. Happy Friday. This afternoon, I'm bringing you an episode of our Crime House show, Murder True Crime Stories. On Murder True Crime Stories, host Carter Roy explores the depths of history's most notorious murders like you've never heard before. In this episode, host Carter Roy unpacks the Wonderland Gang, the 1981 robbery of feared L.A. nightclub owner Eddie Nash, and the brutal revenge that left four dead in a Laurel Canyon townhouse. What you're about to hear is part one of the episode. For part two, follow Murder True Crime Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
In the summer of 1981, the people living next door to 8763 Wonderland Avenue in Los Angeles were at their wits' end. They'd moved to the prestigious neighborhood for peace and quietus. Lately, they were getting anything but. The problem was their neighbors. The crew running the place next door paid $750 a month for the split-level two-bedroom townhouse, and they didn't try to hide what they were up to. Almost every night, they blasted music. They tossed bags of cocaine and heroin off the balcony to people waiting on the sidewalk. Anywhere else, the neighbors might have called the cops. But if they wanted to stay out of trouble, they knew that wasn't an option. The people living there called themselves the Wonderland Gang after the street, and they weren't the kind of folks you wanted to cross. The scariest of the bunch was their leader, Ron Lanius, a 37-year-old Vietnam-era veteran with an ice-cold attitude. Years earlier, Ron had been dishonorably discharged from the Air Force after being convicted of smuggling heroin back to the States in the coffins of dead American servicemen. Ron's right-hand man was 44-year-old Billy Deverell, a longtime heroin addict who'd been arrested over a dozen times for drug possession. By day, he worked as an overhead crane operator. By night, he was the more level-headed of the two, the one who'd sometimes pump the brakes on Ron's worst ideas. But Billy also had moments where he hated himself for what he'd become. Friends said he sometimes talked about getting clean. He never did. Billy lived in the Wonderland house with his girlfriend, 46-year-old Joy Miller. On paper, Joy was the most respectable of the group. She was the ex-wife of a Beverly Hills attorney. She had two grown daughters. There were years of her life before the drugs when she was a normal person, going to dinner parties. That was a long time ago. By the summer of 1981, Joy was a heroin user with seven arrests on her record. She'd also been quietly fighting breast cancer. Just 6 months earlier, she'd had a double mastectomy. By all accounts, none of that slowed her down. When the gang needed someone to sign the lease for the townhouse, it was Joy. Her name was the one on the door. She was the one collecting on debts. People who knew her remembered her as thin, blonde, and with a mouth like a sailor, and the kind of person other addicts didn't want to owe money to. Then there were the two career criminals who filled out the core crew. The first was 32-year-old Tracy McCourt, a wheelman who handled the gang's getaway driving. The second was 42-year-old David Lind. Besides Ron, David was probably the most intimidating one in the house. He was a biker, a heavy heroin user, and a member of the Aryan Brotherhood, the white supremacist prison gang. He and Ron had met behind bars. Earlier that summer, Ron asked him to come down from Sacramento and help run the operation. David rode in on his motorcycle. Five people was already a lot to squeeze into a two-bedroom townhouse, but the place was usually fuller than that. The gang had a couple of regular hangers-on who weren't technically members. The first was Ron's wife, 30-year-old Susan Lanius. Susan and Ron had been married for a decade. She used drugs too, but stayed mostly out of his business. And lately, she'd been spending a lot of time with David Lynn's girlfriend. That girlfriend was 22-year-old Barbara Lee Richardson, who everyone called Butterfly. Barbara had graduated from Cordova High School outside Sacramento in 1976, and by the summer of 1981, she was dating David. She'd ridden down to L.A. on the back of his motorcycle. She'd been sleeping on the living room couch of the Wonderland house ever since. Of everyone there, Barbara was the newest arrival. She was also the youngest by a stretch. For a while, the Wonderland gang did well for themselves. They threw parties that pulled in a wealthy, connected crowd willing to pay top dollar for a steady supply of cocaine and heroin. Musicians showed up. Actors showed up. People from across LA's entertainment world found their way to that townhouse looking to score. Money came in, drugs went out. The gang ran the most influential cocaine operation in town. And then the wheels came off.
If you've spent years trying every diet out there only to end up feeling totally stuck, listen up. This summer can actually be different. You deserve to feel amazing in your own skin, and Weight Loss by Hers is here to help you finally shake things up. They now offer access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including both the Wegovy pen and the brand new Wegovy pill. Yes, a pill, which means you can lose up to 20% of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. Absolutely no needles required. The entire process is 100% online, so you'll connect with a licensed medical provider right from your couch. There's no insurance necessary, and if prescribed, your treatment is delivered straight to your door. You also get 24/7 care team messaging and in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips to back you up every single step of the way. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/pave to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/pave, forhers.com/pave. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hi, listeners. It's Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories. I wanted to let you know that Crime House Plus and Murder True Crime Stories are celebrating America's 250th by dropping a four-part limited series on the crimes that built America. These are the crimes and cases that gave us Miranda rights, sparked criminal profiling, and a murder that built America's missing children movement. Follow Murder True Crime Stories for a new episode every Monday leading up to July 4th, or you can binge all of them right now ad-free with Crime House Plus. To join, go to crimehouseplus.com, or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, tap Try Free at the top of this show's page. The same addicts who are supposed to be the dealers started using more drugs than they were selling. And by the summer of 1981, the math wasn't working anymore. And simply put, they were broke. Not just out of money, out of drugs, too. To keep things going, they started robbing convenience stores, businesses, and houses across Los Angeles. When easy targets dried up, they got more desperate. At one point, they pulled the kind of stunt only a panicked addict would try. They passed off a pound of baking soda as cocaine and sold it for $250,000. Unsurprisingly, that didn't end well. When the buyers figured out what had happened, they put a contract on the entire crew, a standing offer to whoever wanted to come collect. And that kind of contract didn't get filed away and forgotten. It made the Wonderland Gang a moving target. Anyone with a gun and a grudge had a financial reason to come after them. So by late June of 1981, the Wonderland Gang was up against a wall. They needed cash, and they needed it fast, either to pay off what they owed or to grab whatever they could and run. On June 29th, they started calling in their debts, hoping to scrape together whatever they could from people who owed them money. Near the top of that list was a man named John Holmes. He was 36 years old, and at one point, he'd been one of the most famous adult film stars in the world. John was born on August 8, 1944, in a small town in southern Ohio. His childhood was rough. His mother was deeply religious, his stepfather was an alcoholic, and the household was the kind you spend your teenage years trying to get out of. By the time John was 16, he'd had enough. He pushed his stepfather down a flight of stairs after one too many fights, then walked out and joined the army. He shipped off to West Germany, served 3 years with the Signal Corps, and was honorably discharged in 1963. When he got back, John made his way to Los Angeles. He worked all kinds of odd jobs, ambulance driver, door-to-door salesman, forklift operator at a meatpacking warehouse, and in 1965, he married a young nurse named Sharon. At some point during all of that, John decided he was done with dead-end jobs. He told Sharon he wanted to be the best in the world at something. As it turned out, by something, he meant porn. One afternoon, Sharon came home and found John in the bedroom with a measuring tape, sizing himself up to see if he had what it took. When she pushed back, he told her the sex meant nothing, that he still loved her. He compared himself to a carpenter. His body was just his tool. Sharon didn't buy it, but she stayed with him anyway. And over the next decade, John blew up. He appeared in hundreds of adult films. At his peak, he was making $3,000 a day, more than $15,000 a day in today's money. His mustache, his flashy belt buckle, and his diamond pinky ring became the visual shorthand for a 1970s porn star, the look people still picture today. But by the late 1970s, the run was over. John had blown through most of the money, and his marriage had gone hollow. He and Sharon were still legally together, but basically roommates. But his biggest problem was drugs. By the start of the 1980s, he was freebasing cocaine every 10 to 15 minutes, and downing 40 or 50 Valium a day to take the edge off. By 1980, John couldn't reliably perform on a film set anymore, and in the adult film industry, well, that's the only thing you have. So he started doing whatever he could to keep the drugs flowing. He ran errands for local mobsters, he stole luggage from LAX, he maxed out Sharon's credit cards, he started boosting cars. And in 1976, when he was 32 years old, he started sexually abusing a 15-year-old girl named Dawn Schiller. He would go on to traffic and force her into prostitution to pay for his cocaine habit. But it still wasn't enough. So John started trying to cash in on what little fame he had left. In late 1980, a mutual friend introduced him to a Palestinian-American nightclub owner named Adel Nasrallah, though almost nobody called him that. Most people knew him as Eddie Nash. Eddie was rich. He was connected. He owned a whole stable of nightclubs and bars across LA. He was also a heavy drug user himself and a fan of the adult film industry. So when John came into his orbit, Eddie welcomed him in. He started calling John my brother. But things only got worse from there. Soon, John was buying drugs from the Wonderland Gang, then doing odd jobs for them. By the summer of 1981, he owed them more than $1,000. And on top of that, he'd recently screwed up a drug run for them. Right when the gang was at their lowest, the screw-up was the last straw. Ron Lanius saw red. Even Billy, who usually kept a lid on things, was furious. They took John's key to the Wonderland house and kicked him out. Then they beat the crap out of him with the heavy blackthorn walking stick he always carried. All John could do was curl up and take it. When they were done, he could barely stand. Ron and Billy stood over him and demanded the money he owed. John knew what would happen if he didn't pay. So he told the gang the truth. He didn't have the cash. But he knew someone who did. A man with safes full of it. A man who called him brother. A man who'd let him into his house anytime he wanted. And a man who would kill them all if he ever figured out what they'd done. But for John, on the floor in Laurel Canyon with a fresh set of bruises, that was a problem for later. He told the gang that all they had to do was rob the richest man he knew, Eddie Nash.
Thanks for listening. For part two of the story, follow Murder True Crime Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.